So let's have a look at this document, which is by Tony Benn. It's a piece of a speech by Tony Benn. It's on page 16. Speaks to constituents on the role of broadcasting. I'm going to read it to you first, and then look at some of the important questions. I want to talk about the role of the BBC as the prime national instrument in broadcasting. I am not proposing direct government control of the mass media, to which I would be wholly opposed, nor am I making, for the purposes of this argument, any complaint of political bias. Arguments about political balance are quite separate and ought to be conducted quite separately from any debate on the future of mass communications. Broadcasting should be used to the full to help individual men and women to live useful and full lives. That is to say, that in its broadest sense, communication should serve the people and not become their master. But if it is to do so, it has to make available the sort of information and programmes which are really relevant to human needs. These needs include the need to be entertained, the need to be informed, and the need to be educated. The original BBC Charter recognised this. Now, a new dimension has to be added to this basic requirement. This is the need for helping us to adjust to the enormous changes which are occurring in society, and which are far greater for this generation than for any generation that has ever gone before it. We therefore have to add a new criterion relating to the method. If the broadcasting organisations are to perform their task, they must allow us to meet our objectives by talking to each other. Availability of access to the mass media becomes an integral part of the operational requirement. Looking back over the history of the BBC, the general level of information, education and culture has risen sharply. It has also given pleasure to millions of people by bringing them entertainment, sporting events, drama and music. Criticisms must be set in the balance against these formidable achievements and a record of service to the public which is widely recognised and appreciated. However, in recent years this objectivity has been replaced by a growing tendency to personalise news presentation. The newsreader has almost become a commentator. The gap between news and comment has greatly narrowed. This tendency to personalisation, carrying with it editorial powers exercised by individual commentators, has even more serious implications for other types of programmes. The BBC retains, either on the staff or on contract, a whole host of commentators who, being quite free to comment, carry with them some inevitable suggestion of BBC authority. True, the BBC, through its Board of Governors, has no collective view on public matters, and very rarely issues a statement of any kind. But listeners and viewers have come to expect from certain well-known broadcasters a particular line of thought, which is peculiar to them, but which, through the power of the medium, inevitably shapes public thinking. Nobody wants to go back to the earlier tradition, quite the reverse. What is wrong is that availability of access is still too restricted, in that it is almost limited to a few hundred broadcasters chosen by the BBC. First, in respect of the choice of subjects, Britain has thousands of problems which would merit the attention of the broadcasting authorities. Certain ones are regularly picked out for treatment. They include the most important, but do not by any means cover all those that are important. The choice is supposedly influenced by the interests of the mass audience, and it is here that the influence of the programme ratings begins to be felt. It would be surprising if the sort of subjects that are guaranteed to get a large audience in the popular newspapers were not effective on the radio or TV. This is exactly what is happening. Second, in respect of the presentation of the subject, here too the influence of the ratings is very strong, and so is the pressure of time. Important subjects are skimped, important discussions are telescoped, and conflicts are artificially sharpened. The result is inevitably to make for triviality and superficiality, oversimplifying what is immensely complicated and sensationalising almost everything that it touched upon. Third, by choice of people. Any BBC producer soon learns that a certain sort of person will give him just what he wants. Okay, does anybody know who was Tony Benn? Anybody? Okay. Je voulais vérifier si vous considérez qu'il fallait préparer les textes ou non. Je crois que non. Tony Benn was a left-wing Labour Member of Parliament. For a short time, he was a minister in the early 1970s in the Labour government, but he was one of the most influential, most left-wing politicians. C'est un peu le Mélenchon de l'époque. Hein? Mutatis mutandis. That is to say that many people didn't like him, but everybody knew who he was and some of the things he thought. He was very present in the public. And he had a current of people inside the Labour Party defending his ideas. His ideas were generally more respect for trade unions. Defend nationalised industry. No, we don't want privatisation. More money for social services. And if the rich have to pay a lot of tax, that's not a big problem. And this was Tony Benn's idea. And here he is speaking. Who's he speaking to? To his constituents. What does that mean, constituents? Who are they? Anybody know who his constituents are? Constituents are the people who elected him. Yeah, not quite true actually. If you are Member of Parliament for Manchester, everybody in Manchester is one of your constituents. Whether they voted for you or not, you represent them. The people you represent are your constituents. The date is 1968. The Labour Party is in government. 1964 to 1970, the Labour Party is in government. And Tony Benn is part of the Labour Party. So on the one hand, he considers that, you know, his party has the government. On the other hand, he is rather critical of his own government because he doesn't think they're being left-wing enough. Certainly, he would be very happy that they legalised homosexuality in 1967, that they legalised abortion, that they opened the Open University, that they did some things. But he would be very disappointed that they were not too positive, the Labour government was not too positive about trade unions and so on and so forth. Okay. So that's the who and the when and who is he speaking to. Yeah, 1968, there is no election coming up. The election was in 1966. The next election is in 1970. So he's not talking to his constituents to try to get them to vote for him. It's not a problem. It's not yet. It's not the right time. So he's just, as a politician, he's giving a general speech about a general question. And this is the question of, you know, what should the BBC do? What is the BBC for? What is broadcasting for? Now, like many comments on the BBC, most of what he has to say is about news and current affairs programmes. As I've been showing you, the BBC produces an enormous variety of programmes. Music and sport and children's programmes and drama and comedy, documentary and so on and so forth. But most of this document is about news and current affairs. Remember, the news programme tells you what happened today. The current affairs programme talks about an important question for this week. Yeah, the current affairs programme doesn't tell you what happens today. It tells you what are some important debates this week. Okay, so what does he say? Well, he begins in his first paragraph by saying what he is not, what does he not want to talk about. So it's not a strange way of, so he's defining the subject. So there are two things I'm not talking about. Number one, I am not proposing direct government control of the mass media. If you remember, the government does not directly control the BBC. The Prime Minister cannot phone up the BBC and say, this is the programme we want on tomorrow. Do not put this programme on, put this programme on. They can't do it. This is not like France. In France, Monsieur Macron, il appelle France 2. Il dit, demain à 20h, je suis chez vous. Et ils disent oui. Alors, je ne sais pas si c'est légalement obligatoire, mais ils disent toujours oui. In Britain, that would be very shocking. People would be very shocked if the Prime Minister, except if there was a big war or something, people would be very shocked if the Prime Minister announced, "I will be on." We don't do that. But the reason that Tony Benn says this at the beginning is that although Tony Benn is not a supporter of the Soviet government of the time, because he has ideas which are in some ways communist ideas, many people would be say, "Oh yeah, are you sure you don't want it to be the same as in Russia?" And so before he begins, he says, "I'm not in favour of direct government control of the media." So he's just saying that so as to not confuse the picture. And the second thing he says in the first paragraph he says that he does not want to complain about the BBC being too conservative. He said, that is another debate for another day. Today I'm talking about something different. I'm not complaining about the BBC favouring the Conservative Party against the Labour Party today. Notice there in line 5, arguments about political balance are quite separate and ought to be conducted quite separately. Peut-être vous avez remarqué là que le sens du mot quite, c'est le deuxième sens. Est-ce que quelqu'un sait de quoi je parle là? Quite separate. Est-ce que vous pouvez remplacer le mot quite avec un autre mot qui a exactement le même sens ici? Remplacer le mot quite par un autre mot?
En français?
Non, in English. Vous avez l'impression que c'est une question? Oui? Vous avez l'impression que c'est une question piège, c'est presque une question piège. Parce que le, est-ce que vous. Pardon? Yeah, non, exactement pas. Mais merci d'être tombé dans le piège, mais non, justement. Non, le mot quite a deux sens. Le sens le plus courant, oh, it was quite a good film. Le film était assez bien. C'est le plus courant. Mais dans certaines situations, ça veut dire le contraire, ça veut dire absolument. Donc ici, ça veut dire are quite separate means are absolutely separate. Yeah, there you go. That's the second meaning of the word quite. It's a more formal meaning, and it is used with limit adjectives. A limit adjective, for example, if something is separate or it is not separate, it cannot be very separate. Yeah, this is what we call a limit adjective. You cannot say very or a bit separate, it's separate or it's not separate. And in these adjectives, you can add quite to mean absolutely. Voilà, vous avez appris quelque chose aujourd'hui. À mon avis, vous l'aviez su vaguement. C'est plus, j'espère, en tout cas. Okay, so he then goes on in the second paragraph then to, and the rest, to say what he thinks. First of all, he defines what he thinks broadcasting is for. Then he adds a new idea. There are three ideas which go back a long way: information, education, and entertainment. But he adds a new idea. I will look at it in a moment. Then he says very positive things about the BBC. But he ends with a series of criticisms of news and current affairs on the BBC. One, that it's always the same people on the BBC commenting. We hear these criticisms today on the of television in France. It's always the same people being interviewed. Yeah, we're always hearing the same people, and this is what Tony Benn is saying. Okay, now what we need to look at is, et d'ailleurs on peut l'introduire comme ça si on veut. What elements of Tony Benn's speech show typical questions which were questions in 1920, 1930, 1940, which go through the whole of the history of the BBC. Well, first of all, he mentions in line 10 the need to be entertained, to be informed, and to be educated. One moment. And this goes right back to, of course, John Reith's slogans. Yes?
Can you just
Oh yes, the question, in fact, any document really that you're commenting on, really you need to see, does he open up questions which are typical questions for the history of the BBC? These were questions, and the answer is, spoiler, yes, So what does he say here, which helps us to understand the history of the BBC? Because, oh, this is a question which was already asked in the 1930s. This is a question which was already asked in the 1940s. And I will tell you in a moment. Or is it a document which opens completely new questions? Pas seulement ce n'est pas le cas ici, mais on ne va pas vous donner un document qui n'ouvre pas les questions typiques. Okay, so that's what he does. So let's have a look at some of these typical questions. The question of being informed, educated and entertained goes right back to the beginning of the BBC. That was the slogan of John Reith. Although it has to be said that when John Reith said people need to be entertained, he meant the maximum of Mozart's and the minimum of dance music. So the meaning of entertainment has changed. Whereas in the 1970s, the BBC was producing the most avant-garde radio programme with John Peel, where you could hear punk, which you couldn't hear on the commercial radios. So the idea entertainment is important goes right through the history of the BBC, but the meaning changes. Now, Tony Benn suggests a number four. Inform, educate, entertain, that's three. And he said, there's a number four, and this one is line 13. The need for helping us to adjust to the enormous changes that are occurring in society. Okay, so that's quite ambitious. Hello, BBC, let me tell you what I want you to do. I want you to help people to adjust to the enormous changes. So what changes might he be thinking of? Well, I've been talking about some of them today. In 1968 is the year of the horrible racist speech by Enoch Powell. But in any case, the 60s and 70s are this period when multicultural society is becoming more important. And Tony Benn says, the BBC should be helping people to adjust to this. And one might think, notez bien que vous pouvez utiliser beaucoup de mots d'or. One might think that a soap opera like The Empire Road was helping people to get used to the idea of a multicultural society. One might think that the special programs for Asian immigrants are part of helping people to adjust to the new society. But one also might think that these documentary series or educational series about the ascent of man, life is more complicated, we need more educated people. The 60s and 70s is the time when suddenly in Britain they open 25 new universities. In 1950, working class people didn't go to university. It was for the elite. But because cars and chemicals and plastics and medicine and the beginnings of electronics and the beginnings of computers, industry was getting so much more complicated in every rich country. They said, we need much more universities. Combien de gens ici ont des grands-parents qui ont fait l'université? Voilà, c'est très très bien, mais il n'y a pas beaucoup. Donc, je te montre un truc. And the same thing in Britain. The number of people going to university is going right up. And so, also, it would be logical that television also would be more interested in educating people. The BBC should help us adjust to the enormous changes which are occurring in our society. This is the period. This is 1968. So even if the women's movement in Britain is quite weak, in France there's a lot of movement going on in 1968. A lot of radical ideas. And so, does the BBC have a link to all that? Yes.
Was he talking about this sentence? I would have talked about immigration when he says things are changing because we are approaching the 70s, or is it only feminism?
I think he's being very general. It's probably both. It's quite wide.
He could have talked about both.
And also the question of multicultural society has been hot for quite a while. In 1958, big racist riots in London. In 1968, Enoch Powell's speech saying there will be blood in the streets, there will be blood in the streets. And so this is a question. Now, one might think that the BBC did very well in helping people to adjust. Or one might think that the BBC was really not very good. That doesn't matter, yeah, but you have to give some examples. In the rest of the document, he talks about news and current affairs. So he's no longer talking about sport and music and drama and so on, just news and current affairs. And he has some problem. First of all, he says that the news commentators are getting too personal. Yeah, you know, like you have in France, you have We touche pas mon poste. It's a very personal, that kind of program. It's about serious questions, but it's a very personal approach. Now, that's probably an extreme example. Yeah. But also, he's complaining about this, that it's getting too less objective. And he also says that the news is often getting too sensational and too simplified. Now, I see this. These are criticisms we still see today. And I see this in France today. You hear a politician being interviewed on the radio, and they say, you really don't like this other person in your party, do you? Say, well, this is this policy, and he has this. Yes, but do you like him? The journalist will try to make politics into a personal question because it's more sexy. Yeah, this is what the sort of thing he's complaining about in line 45, 46, 47. The result is inevitably to make for triviality and superficiality. Yeah, so he's saying, and I think it's probably true, unfortunately, journalists do not say, explain what you think about the situation in the Middle East. They say, do you denounce this or that or the other? Yeah. And so it makes a very sharp and simplified situation. In fact, it's true that journalists very rarely ask open questions. Please explain your opinion. They never say that. Of course, some are better than others. And finally, at the very end, he says, the problem is the choice of people. Any BBC producer soon learns that a certain sort of person will give him just what he wants. So he's saying, it's always the same kind of people giving their opinion on the television. And this is a problematic that goes back into the history of the BBC. In the 1930s, there was a small group of people around Olive Shapley trying to get the voices of ordinary people onto the radio in documentaries about the factories and so on. On the other hand, the BBC had a very limited idea. Perhaps you remember that before the Second World War, they worked very hard. They didn't want anybody with a Manchester accent. They didn't want anybody with a Liverpool accent. They only wanted the Queen's English. So they had a very restrictive. Now, gradually things got more, there were more different voices, but nevertheless, in 1968, Tony Benn could still complain that they always ask the same people and they always ask the same kind of people. If you wanted to, here you could give a couple of examples of when people have tried to change this. Ewan McCall, with his Radio Ballads, tried to make a new kind of programme to have the voices of different kinds of people, for example. So what you have to be doing is to find what are the typical questions and then a couple of sentences for different examples. Thank you for listening. That's enough for today. I will see you at the same time next week, but not on the 28th. Oh yeah, Ewan McCall. Ewan.